Welcome to the Do Your Good podcast series. In this podcast series, you'll hear from me, Sybil, and other experts in the field to help you make your money matter and make a huge difference in the world. I come to you with over two decades of experience as a person who's helped donors give away over $45 million in donations, both large and small. This podcast series is meant to give you the tools you need to be effective in the world and fund nonprofits and issues that you care about with meaning and purpose, and to make a true, deep difference in the world. Hello, everybody. I am delighted to introduce you to season five of my podcast series. Season five is especially for my nonprofit friends to help you hone your fundraising pitch. I did a live training that was 8 months long every first Monday of the month, and it was super popular with my email subscribers. I had such wonderful interactions from nonprofits, and in each training, I focused in on one of seven key elements that I think you need, my nonprofit friend, to be successful in honing your fundraising pitch. So what I'm doing now for this season five of the podcast is I've heavily edited the live training, and I also offer some of my own special interjections in the middle of the training to guide you and point you in the direction of even more resources, so that you in the podcast universe, in the nonprofits who attend to listen to my podcast, you can get the benefit of my training. If you're a donor that likes to listen to my podcasts, please share this with your favorite nonprofit, because this training is geared to help them raise even more money. And I'm sure as a donor, you want your nonprofits to succeed. This specific training you're about to listen to is all about how you as a nonprofit leader can define success appropriately so that the donor and funder that you're trying to raise money from will really be inspired by what you're doing. So have a listen.
So we're going to get started. Today, what we're going to talk about is how to explain your success so that you hit a home run. So to get you grounded, this is one of my Be Real trainings. And I want to help you learn to unlock a donor's mind. It's really important so that your cause becomes theirs. It's super important to me to help you with that. And so today we're going to do a deep dive into how to hook your donor at hello with a winning success statement. All right. So, and I see there's some wonderful people answering, putting in the chat, like who they are, where they're from. This is awesome. Sorry, I have to get distracted because I love seeing all the people. Rhonda Sims, Save Our Youth. Hello. Susan Spivy O'Neill from Southern Redhead Farms Rescue. Hello. Oh my gosh, this is so great. These are awesome groups. I see the Boy Scouts of America, person who represents them are there. The Little Red Dog is there. Oregon Citizens Utility Board. Oh my gosh, this is great. We have a great group of people and the attendees keep ticking up. Oh, I'm so excited. Yay. Thank you for joining. Okay. First, let's do a refresh. What are the overall seven elements to include in a pitch? And like I told you, I did a training in October that got into all seven high level. So if you're interested in that and you weren't able to make the October training, we did record it. So you can let me know, send me an email, and we'll send that to you if you didn't already get it. But here's a refresh. So the seven pitch elements, the things you need to include in your pitch, either in writing or when you have somebody, you know, at lunch, you want to talk to them about it. You want to have a success statement. You want to have a clear problem statement that you're trying to solve. You want to explain your organization's role in a crystal clear way. You want to explain how the grant that the donor is going to give you or the donation the donor is going to give you will leverage other dollars. They really like that. You want to talk about how your work, even if it's super local, is a great example that could scale, that other people will copy what you're doing because it's so amazing what you're doing. You want to explain your collaborators, and you want to have a really good budget so that when someone reads it, they're like, oh my gosh, these people have it together. Okay. Like I said, I did a high-level discussion in October. Today, we're digging deeply into success. And then for the next 7 months, every first Monday, I'm digging into every one of these seven in depth. All right, here. Now let's talk about success. This is the thing. I want you to write your success statement so that the donor's like, oh my gosh, you had me at hello. So let's talk about how to make this happen. First, the pro tip. Offer your success statement at the beginning of your pitch. You might say, Sybil, this is so obvious, but I have to tell you, I'm really surprised at how few people do this correctly. It's almost like you assume that we already know what you're doing, so you go straight into the nuts and bolts, but be sure you talk about what does success mean for your nonprofit right up front. We're going to go through some examples today of where a nonprofit did it really well and then where a nonprofit didn't do it well so that we can break it down. Okay, so here's the summary of what to include in your success statement in order of priority. Number one, make it exciting. Make your success exciting. I know you do this every day. And sometimes as a nonprofit leader, you can get really bummed out because the stuff you're trying to do is really, really hard. But with a success statement, think a lot about why is it that you started doing what you're doing today? Why do you care about it? And make sure that that shows in your success statement. Then explain what you hope to achieve. What do you hope to achieve? Be clear about the scope of your work or project and demonstrate that you collaborate well with others. And you should do this all in pretty much one sentence with your success. Because remember, the seven pitch elements do have elements of these in them. So you can expand upon some of these things later. But your success statement is the most important right up front. You want to make it exciting. You want to explain what you hope to achieve. You want to be clear about the scope of your work or project. And you want to demonstrate that you collaborate well with others. Okay? Now, let's go on and look at an example of a really good pitch. And I keep all this stuff anonymous so that, you know, nobody gets called out. But even the good pitch, maybe that's a good thing. I can call the group out for that. But the good pitch, these are from direct write-ups that people have given me, okay? X nonprofit partners are launching the largest market-based climate smart forestry initiative in the Western United States. Holy moly, this thing is so darn good. It's one sentence and it gets to all of the elements that I brought up in the key things we need to do. Let's break it down. Okay, so first, the first thing they say is X nonprofit partners. So that's about collaboration. The next thing they say is, are launching the largest market-based. So you're like, oh my gosh, this is exciting and new. If you care about new launch to things, if you're that kind of funder, and if you're really interested in creative things to partner with market solutions as well, that's exciting to you. That pulls out right there. Then right after that, the nonprofit said, Climate Smart Forestry Initiatives. They're launching the largest market-based Climate Smart Forestry Initiative. They're very clear about what they hope to achieve. It's a Climate Smart Forestry Initiative. And that word actually makes sense. It's not an acronym. It's been said to anyone who cares about climate change. They know that there's something around forestry. Super cool. And then they even do a great thing here. They go in the Western United States. They're defining the scope right there. In this case, they're defining the scope of their work through a geographical boundary. But you could have a project that may not have to do with geography, but it's like, let's say you're working on pharmaceutical drug pricing in rural areas to make sure there's access. That would be the scope. Rural communities supporting them to have affordable access to the drugs that they, life-saving drugs that they need. Okay, so that could be an example of also scope. But I love this because it has this all these elements together. Okay, let's just remind you, you make it exciting, explain what you hope to achieve, be clear about the scope of your work or project, and demonstrate that you collaborate well with others. All right, now let's talk about the three top mistakes to avoid that I've seen way too often. I don't want this to be you. And then we're going to have an example of a mistake. Somebody who put something together that's a mistake. Mistake number one, you bury the success statement. You don't have it right at the top. You have it maybe the third paragraph in. And you're sort of thinking that the funder will want other things in the beginning. Don't bury it. Put it right at the top. Also, a lot of times you can be overly complex. You have acronyms or long run-on sentences, all that kind of stuff. And it's easy to get this way because you're living this every day. So to avoid this mistake, test out your success statement with someone who doesn't know your issue well and see if they understand it. Mistake number three, you forget to include the success altogether. You get so into all the details and the nitty-gritty that you just forget to tell the funder about why you're doing what you're doing in the beginning. This happens so often and you don't want that to be you. Okay, let me give you an example. Woohoo! You probably just can tell from looking at this right away why this is not what you want to do. And I altered the facts in this one, so you have no idea who this is because I changed things around, but it is based on a real life example. This was the first paragraph in this proposal. X is requesting funds for a playground costing blah, 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 the budget secured. The X on the abandoned tennis court at X school will be 15,000 square feet for kids, rides, bikes, blah, blah, blah. The space will include roller tunnels, pump tracks, rock gardens, teeter totters. Additionally, there'll be green space. It'll feature seating areas for friends to gather and artwork developed by local students. Now, I have to say, this is a pretty cool, I mean, overall, it's like if I cared about this work, I can see the passion in this person's write-up. But I leave here not knowing. So think about, after what I just talked to you about, what are the things here that are good, but what are the things here that are missing? Is this proposal leaving money on the table? Is it keeping me from being excited? Think about it. Did that statement, make you feel excited about their success, what they might get? Did it show you what their achievements were? Did it explain the scope? And did it explain the other collaborators, like who else they're working with very well? Or did it bury the success? Was it overly complex? Or did it fail to include the success statement altogether? Think about that. Think about what the mistakes to avoid and that example are.
Hey, everybody, I want to interject here. I want to let you know that I'm including in my blog and in the show notes a link to the slideshow I used for this training, because I feel like sometimes when I'm discussing how to write and talk about your success, sometimes it requires a little bit of a visual because I was doing this as a live training. So I just want to let you know that you can easily get a PDF of the presentation by checking out my blog or the show notes to the podcast episode. Thanks a lot.
And here's yes, good pitch. X nonprofit partners are launching the largest market-based climate smart forestry initiative in the Western United States. I can't wait to read the rest of that. And if someone came up to me and talked to me about this, I also wouldn't be able to hold back on hearing more about what they're doing.
And now for an ad, but don't go away because there's a lot more to talk about related to your success statement. Hello, everyone. I want to let you know that I am putting forward a pretty exciting new podcast season, which is going to focus on the journey I took with one of my clients to think through effective funding strategies to reduce firearm-related suicide in rural and remote communities, specifically looking at Oregon as an example. So tune into my podcast series, September 30th through October 21st. Every Monday, I'll have a new special episode specifically discussing this issue. Thanks a lot.
Yeah. All right. So Cheryl, thank you so much for asking. Do you recommend the same format for both grant writing and general donation plea posts on social media and email? Cheryl, I really like this question and I'm glad you asked it. I want to answer it in two parts. Part one, if you're thinking about a success statement, so the kind of thing that we did today, that it should be a short, punchy one sentence. The success statement should be able to plug and play for your social media, for the top of any grant writing materials, and for everything else. Okay, so for this particular training, I think this can be really helpful for you for all of those formats. And it's the same format. However, I want to talk about a second point, which is if you're thinking about making sure you're incorporating all seven elements in your pitch, in grant writing, when someone asks you for a proposal, you can have much more detail. Okay, so you can put in, other than the success statement, you'll know if you stick with me and stay through the deep detailed trainings for all seven elements. I'm actually going to suggest that some of the other pieces of the seven elements, like with leverage and scale, that's not going to be one sentence and as punchy in the one sentence arena. It'll be much more of an analysis on how you can explain how you want to leverage your dollars, for example. Okay, so for all seven elements with grant writing, you're going to end up getting much more in depth. But then hopefully my training will help you to think through how you can pull out the one or two key words and sentences from a conversation, for example, around leveraging the grant or other things, to then put on social media and other things. Because the social media work and the website, and if you want to put on your website, it gets much simpler, much higher level, because you want to engage someone to then click on the link or to call you up and ask you for a meeting. And then I have another sub note, Cheryl. This is so fun. I love questions. Be careful not to go too long on anyone, but there's another sub note, which is in my Be Real video series, I pull out and I'd really discuss how do you write an email to someone so that they'll actually open it. And your question made me think about that too, because with an email that's personalized, you're using all of these same seven elements, but you're trying to make sure it's sort of like in between the grant writing and the social media piece. You want to be sure that you personalize it to that person, and you're slightly more detailed than you do in social media, but you're not going to get into like a 3 or 4 page or 5 page full proposal, or else you'll lose them at hello. And I'm telling you this because that's what happens to me. I'll either get too high level on an email and I'll just hit delete, or I'll get too detailed and I'm like, oh my gosh, this thing, I can't even track it. It's too much.
This is Sybil. I want to interject quickly. The specific training I'm talking about related to writing an email that someone will open is my lesson one called Be Relevant in my Be Real series. It's all for free up on my website, and you can go check it out there.
In all of these trainings for the next 7 months, this is why I really like questions asked. I'm going to think, Cheryl, a lot about how to sort of scale those messages and help you think about what these messages can be for the different contexts that we're talking about. So thank you, Cheryl, and hold me to task if I don't do it well enough, and I'll make sure that we talk about it more. Okay.
Okay, so we have another question from David, and he wants to know if you can share a great pitch statement that you may have from start to finish. So I know you did share one during the presentation. So do you have any other kind of examples of what would make a good statement to share off success?
Oh my gosh, I love this question. I have so many, and I'm actually reviewing one of my clients' dockets right now. When I say docket, it means that I'm reviewing about 30 different proposals and literally going through this right now. And I feel sort of bad though, but I don't have them right up here. What I'm going to do, David, is after this training, I'll put together a few other, like 4 or 5 additional quotes with good pitches, and I'll send those out right after this, because I literally was just looking at a whole bunch and going, that one was really kicked it out of the park. That one did great. So I'll do that for you.
And this is Sybil interjecting. I do have more information for you. Check out my blog and the show notes, and you'll find out more success statements and more information about how to write a good success statement in those documents. Everything's for free for you. So I look forward to you checking it out. Thanks.
So we're looking at chats and Q&A. This is awesome. Okay. So
oh, Rhonda, yeah, I missed that. There we go.
No, she just did it. So Rhonda, so do you have a suggestion for someone looking for the financial support of the vision when I'm at ground zero establishing a nonprofit? I just have the vision, not the provision. This is a great question, Rhonda, because actually a lot of my clients support organizations that are really just starting out. Okay, so I'm going to start answering this with a story, and then I'm going to get into specifically trying to answer your question. I literally was on a Zoom call with a wonderful individual, and I was her first person she's ever pitched to try to get a donation, because her organization just started. And this client that I work for, these specific donors, they want me to seek out smaller nonprofits that are just starting up. Like, they really like helping with smaller grants. So it's a perfect fit. My heart went out to her because the greatest thing she did was she sat down and she's like, started giving me her pitch. And then she said, took a deep breath. And she's like, Sybil, I'm really nervous. You're the first time I've ever talked to somebody about raising money for this. And she cared so much about our issue. It was about trying to get a native seed bank for habitat restoration on rangeland. And she was working with all of these interesting people, and she's really amazing. And so that's the first thing I want to say, Rhonda, is if you're just starting out and you're at ground zero and you don't feel like you're 100% yet with all of the key pieces in order, there's donors out there that want to support you and be genuine about it. It's totally fine. What would be the saying? The perfect be the enemy of the good here. So that's the first thing. So I'm glad you're starting.
So I'm just going to throw in a quick follow-up to Rhonda's.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Just something that I thought of is if you're just starting out, what should you do with a success statement? Because you don't have success yet to share. So what do you say instead to get funders and donors excited?
Thanks, Amanda. I love that question.
And now for an ad, but stay tuned because my audience asked lots of interesting questions during this specific training. So stay tuned to listen and learn. Hello, everyone. I'm so glad that you're enjoying my podcast. In my podcast, I hope to talk to you, the wonderful donors and philanthropists that I work with, to help you think through the most effective way to make your money matter. I also, in my podcast series and through all my trainings, want to help and support the nonprofits that are out there trying to raise money and hone their pitch. Because I'm somebody that works with donors, I get pitched all the time by amazing nonprofit leaders, so I know what it takes to raise money effectively. Please check out everything I have to offer at www.doyourgood.com. I have a whole host of course materials and lessons, videos, downloadable documents, a blog that I keep updated. All of it is 100% free for you to see and review and learn from. Please check it out. Again, www.doyourgood.com. Thanks a lot.
That's a really, really good point. So if you're thinking about this and you're just starting out, I actually feel like you don't need to worry about. So usually folks that I've seen that are starting new nonprofits, you're not starting them from complete scratch. You're probably an expert in that field, or you have a family member who's experienced a situation that you want to rectify through a nonprofit, or a friend. A lot of folks I've interviewed and talked with, they've gotten into the nonprofit space because a loved one has experienced a challenge that they then want to create a nonprofit around. But most likely you're leaning into this cause you care about because you do have experience in the issue. And so I want to do a friendly pushback and say, yeah, maybe your nonprofit hasn't existed for 10, 20, 30 years, but you're in it to win it. You are, oh my God, that's a funny saying. I shouldn't say it like that. You are in it to succeed. And so you still can create a success statement that you use as your North Star to make it work. So Rhonda, don't let that stop you there. And thank you, Amanda, for that question, because I would challenge you all to still be able to create a success statement, even if you don't have many years behind you.
Awesome. So we have lots of questions coming in now. I'm going to go with the one that's related to what you were just talking about. And for everyone else who's asked, we'll come to you in a few minutes. So how do you make the pitch success statement if you have an established project, but are trying to sustain or build it in some way?
Okay. Oh, these are great questions. Okay, you have this actually, I would argue that this makes your job pretty easy. If you have an established project, and I'm going to also do a little story about this too, but first I want to just say out loud, if you have an established project, you can sit back and look at the established project that you've accomplished, that you succeeded at. And if you are somebody who's a go-getter, which you are because you work in the nonprofit world, you care about the world, making a difference. What you do then is you look at what you successfully got, but you look forward to the gap that you feel still needs to be achieved in the future. Okay? So your success statement can say something like, after years of succeeding at X issue, we see we've accomplished so much, but we see a need to be able to take it to the next level to do Y. And then, and you'll see when you come to my future trainings where I talk about scale, that's when you lead into the next sentence can be, here's how we're going to scale our work and fill that gap. And here's how we're going to leverage additional dollars. So it's actually really great if you have a past track record at past successes, you can use that to launch your goal for your future success. Let me use an example. One of my clients, one of the philanthropic organizations I work with, the trustees that I really adore, I've worked with them for over 8 years. When I first started working with them, they were very interested in climate change and healthy habitat work. And when we first started out, they said, we care generally about those two issues. And so I went out and talked to as many nonprofits as I could. And I already know these issues pretty well because it is an area of expertise for me. And I worked in the nonprofit sector in this area too. So I went out and I talked to everybody and I got as much information as I could from them. And then the first couple years, I said, let's do a very broad kind of grant making to a lot of different organizations and see what successes they're able to get, you know, and how they're able to do it. And then after year two, I was able to work with those nonprofits and they were able to then even once that we sort of looked at the past 2 years at all the things they've achieved and then the things they may not have been able to achieve, but the learnings from that, which is also don't be shy. It's okay if you don't succeed at everything. That's okay. We were able to continue to hone the success statement for the future with them in partnership with the trustees who cared about doing this. And so that's a way where we were looking back at the successes and then we were talking about what worked. And then the nonprofits were able to articulate a narrative for me of what could work in the future. And then they continued to get funding, but they were even more focused on those successes. And so that's just a real life example of how nonprofits working with the kind of donors I worked with were really able to succeed both in the past and the future from their learnings. Okay, great. Thanks, Rhonda. Thanks for saying I love the advice. That means a lot to me. I really want to help out. Amanda, you've been tracking some of the questions. I see Sydney has one, but I wasn't looking yet. You've been tracking the chats too, so let me know.
Did you want to do Sydney's or try one from the chat?
You tell me. You've been tracking. Okay. Let's be sure we answer all of them because we have time.
All right, let's do one from the chat and we'll come back to Sydney after.
Okay.
So because just this is more related to what you were just talking about.
Okay.
So someone is asking how and where can they contact possible donors? So like where do they find funders to help them with funding? In their case, they are a health organization located in Mexico, but they receive funds from around the world.
Oh
so
my God.
Not limited to just local donors. They're good with anyone.
Yeah, you all have wonderful questions here. So I actually did do a training a while ago on this. We'll have to dig out the recording on this too, Amanda. But there's a lot of ways to do this. And so, like I said, it does require an entire training, but let me give you some high-level things to think about right now. The first thing is, one thing I don't think nonprofits always think about top level, so I want to bring this up, is there are a lot of funder collaborations. So colleague funders network together and they create their own sort of networking organization. For example, in the environmental funder space, there's the Environmental Grantmakers Association, Biodiversity Funder Group. A lot of those collaborations have websites, and then they list their members. Now, I want to be careful here. They list their members, but it doesn't mean that you should go calling all of those groups, because there's sensitive topics there. But what that can do is you can, let's say you're a person who's working in the environmental space. You find that kind of an organization online that's a funder network. You see the members. Then what you can do, if the foundation, Private Family Foundation, is official in the United States, you can then look up their 990s, which are all public, and they list the grants that they give. And so then what you can do is it reduces like the general, just like, let me do a general search. You know that these funders care enough to actually network with other funders about an issue that you might be funding. And so that's a good hint that it's a good use of your time to then look at their 990s. And you can find their 990s on the Internal Revenue Service site or through GuideStar or others. And like I said, I do have a training on some of this too. So we should be sure that we follow up so that people can get that training as well. Okay. There's a lot of other ways too.
Go ahead.
Because there's so many other questions.
No, keep going. I thought you were done, but you have more to say. Keep going.
Yeah. Another way that you can reach out and find donors is remember that your current supporters, people who might be giving you funds, they are your best advocates. They can fundraise for you. And if you're fundraising sort of donor to donor and they really, really love the work, they can be very helpful. And so don't forget to ask your donors to support you. And what you can also do is even have a very specific event just for donors, that donors may host, your favorite supporters might host that and have a nice dinner or even a Zoom to talk about it. There's other pieces too, but those are the top two that I feel like sometimes I've noticed folks forget. So the two things you sometimes forget to do. Any, you've been tracking the chats and the questions. Valerie has a question in the Q&A and I have chats. So let's make sure we answer everything. Amanda, let me know who I should talk to next.
Okay, let's go with Valerie. So Valerie explains the kind of the background of her question, and she's been having a hard time with competition with other nonprofits. So usually you expect nonprofits are going to work together on the same problem because they all care about the same problem. She's been having some problems with some of them not really doing that and just being more trying to take advantage. So she's asking, like, what's going on and shouldn't we be working together?
Oh, this is a really important question. I'm going to start it with a story, and then I'm going to talk about how we can find solutions for you, Valerie. And I don't think you're alone. When I was in the nonprofit world, I worked for a smaller nonprofit, and before I worked for foundations. So I worked for a smaller nonprofit, and I was fundraising. And I then got a job working for a different nonprofit. And as part of that, I looked through the files. And when I was looking through the files, I saw a proposal for funding for a project that I had actually led and done at my previous job. So I was really happy because they successfully got the money and I had moved over to that job later. But I was like, I happen to know that this group did not do as much as I did, yet they used all the things I did. And I always keep that with me, right? So I keep that with me. And so on my website, I have bifurcated it. I have a donor side of my website, funder side, and I have a nonprofit side. On the donor side, I actually created for donors a training on how to fund collaborations well so that you don't inadvertently cause some of the tensions that you're talking about, Valerie. And that's all coming from the story that I'm telling you about. And it's not just that story. There was plenty of others. Okay. So you're not alone, but here's the thing. I think let's talk about solutions first. Okay. Then now let's talk about solutions. The first thing is that you 100% need to forge independent relationships with your donors so that it doesn't matter what the other nonprofit is doing. That's the first thing. So that's why I'm really glad you're in my trainings, because I want you to have the power to have your good independent relationships. You probably already do have, you're probably saying, Sybil, I do have independent relationships, but this is just justifying how you need to have your own. The other word of warning I have, though, is if this nonprofit and leader is also has really strong relationships with those donors, what you don't want to do is to the donor, like, badmouth that nonprofit. I don't think you would anyway, but that won't help you any. But what you want to do is lean in to a good success statement. Make sure that you're doubling down on getting independent relationships with the donors. Because the reality is, I'm a person, like I said before, I get pitched all the time. And I'll oftentimes get pitched by 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 nonprofit leaders all working on the same issue. And they all have a slightly different take on it. It's pretty obvious to me that they don't all agree. But the best situation is when they're not dissing on the other person. They're just sort of explaining their success statement, their vision, their theory of change. And then I, as the funder, I can fit it all together. I could be like, okay, that person's funding. And now this person that didn't work well with you, it could be very likely that if the donor and the funders are doing their job, they're seeing right through it. It's just you might not see that because they're not going to say it directly out loud. All right, let's keep going. More questions. This is a lot of fun.
Yes, we have one from Anna. Do you think foundations are becoming more partial to funding coalitions and collaborations among nonprofits that are working on the same issue?
Absolutely. So I think two things are going on here. One is funders themselves are forming funder collaborations more and more often. And I did a series of interviews with some institutions that are like starting to work with these funder collaborations because they're on the rise. And so that's the first thing. So the funders themselves are collaborating more together, and they're also really interested in funding collaborations more together. Now, when we talk about budgets in my 7-part series here I'm working on, there's a tricky piece around that because we need to think about how do you present a collaboration both in budget and narrative. You don't always have to force everyone, all you nonprofits, you don't have to like be all under one roof and have one proposal. You can have separate ones as long as you're talking together. But it's always good to actually have a budget that's a collaboration budget in addition to your side budget or your project budget for your group.
Hey, this is Sybil. Let me interject here for a second. I'm going to include the template I created on budgets and how to write a budget in a collaborative environment with other nonprofits as well. So check out my blog and my show notes, and you'll be able to access that downloadable free PDF. Thanks.
But yes, short answer to your question, Anna, is yes, they are becoming more partial to that.
And I'd just like to add that one of Sybil's upcoming free trainings, like the one we have today, is actually on collaboration. So if you make sure to come back for that, and you'll get some more info on how that works.
Yes, digging deep into that, because it is really important and it can be tricky.
I hope you enjoyed that training. It was very fun for me to do. As I said before, I have a lot more resources in my blog and in the show notes, so please check those out. And the upcoming weeks of this podcast series for season 5, I'm going to continue to talk about the key 7 elements that I think you all need, my nonprofit friend, in a pitch. So tune in next Monday and the Mondays following for more information. Thanks so much. I'm so happy you're listening to my podcast and taking this information seriously to be the best fundraiser you can be. Have a great day.
So there you have it. I hope you enjoyed this podcast as much as I enjoyed making it for you. So if you want to find out more about what I have to offer, please check out www.doyourgood.com and learn more ways to make your money matter. Until next time, do your good and be well.